Let's say our opening prayer. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved
Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master, Dearest Mother,
Beloved David,
Saints and Sages of all Religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Peace, bliss. Amen. I'm going to play a little music and we can meditate for a few minutes. Now this is I may have played this before, but it's quite an unusual series of songs that we got from a man named Eric Huffman at the Song of the Morning Ranch when Bob Raymer was there. That was the ranch that Yogeshwarya Black started. And so Eric gave us a cassette, and then we have these things from him. Now, this is the first one on that album, and it's called How Could Anyone Ever Tell You you're anything less than beautiful. And he said he wrote this for Master after reading and hearing about some criticism of him. And he's saying it the opposite way, saying, how could anyone ever tell you that you're anything less than beautiful? It's a little loud and a little bit of scratchy sound to it, but it's quite beautiful.
How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle. How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you are anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you are less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my
our Bible reading is from Proverbs 18, verse 4. Oop, wrong one. Sorry, it's 24. A man that hath friends must shew himself friendly, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. From Ecclesiastes 4, beginning with verse 9. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. And from the prophet, I believe so. This is from a poem by Khalil Gibran called On Friendship. And a youth said, "Speak to us of friendship." And he answered, saying, "Your friend is your needs answered. He is your field which you sow with love and reap with thanksgiving. and he is your board and your fireside. For you come to him with your hunger, and you seek him for peace. When your friend speaks his mind, you fear not the nay in your own mind, nor do you withhold the eye. And when he is silent, your heart ceases not to listen to his heart. For without words in friendship, all thoughts, all desires, all expectations are born and shared with joy that is unacclaimed. When you part from your friend, you grieve not, for that which you love most in him may be clearer in his absence, as the mountain is to the climber is clearer from the plain. And let there be no purpose in friendship save the deepening of the spirit. For love that seeks aught but the disclosure of its own mystery, not love but a net cast forth, and only the unprofitable is caught. And let your best be for your friend. If he must know the ebb of your tide, let him know its flood also. For what is your friend that you should seek him with hours to kill? Seek him always with hours to live. For it is his to fill your need, but not your emptiness. And in the sweetness of friendship, let there be laughter and sharing of pleasures. For in the dew of little things, the heart finds its morning and is refreshed. He's quite a poet.
I just read that poem a week or two ago for the first time ever.
It's quite amazing, isn't it? He always adds things you recognize them when you hear them, but you wouldn't formulate them that way yourself. That's a real inspired person. So I've been thinking a lot about David lately, and that's why I'm thinking of friendship. And I'm writing an introduction to the book, which I'm overdue for. I've got a couple more days at the most. It's quite enjoyable to write about him. So I'm going to share with you a good piece of it. You'll be able to read it. You know, I often thought David would write something in his for his blog, for yogasharyadavid.com. And he would send out an email telling everyone, or the system would. I think once you posted it, it automatically sends it out to people who have subscribed to his post, his blog. But we used to get it just before church sometimes, many times. And then when David would speak that day, he often would read it too. So, with that as my example, I'm going to do an early reading too. Okay. This is introduction to his book. I don't know if we've got a title for it. Anyone know? Kate? Do we have a title for the book?
I believe it's David G. Recollections by Friends and Devotees, something along that line. Mm. And Janice has played with a few different things. Rebecca might remember better than I, because she's also proofed it, and so is Judy. So if either of them could come up with something more accurate, you can.
Oh, thank you.
Something along that line.
Rebecca is not weighing in, so she must be happy with your explanation.
So am I.
So, here we go. David Hickenbottom was my closest and dearest friend in this lifetime. We shared so much of life, both the spiritual and the mundane. We shared a dedication to Mother and the spiritual path. These things were uppermost in our minds and filled our daily lives. Though we did many regular things together, it was rare that we didn't talk about spiritual subjects, even during these times. In the early days of our friendship, we went to movies and walks and restaurants together. Often we were accompanied by others, but we were very content to just be in each other's company. David lived with me in the late 1970s, renting a room in my three-bedroom student housing apartment. It was during this time that we got to attend some of the same university classes. We were lucky to be able to take classes in Eastern religions and philosophy from Dr. Frank Conlon. Professor Conlon was one of those teachers in our lives that we felt completely at home with because his interests and insights were contagious, well explained, and always thought-provoking. So we signed up for every class of his that fit our schedules. Kate also took several classes taught by him in the 1980s. We had classes together in religious studies and early Christian history. Again, we tended to follow just one professor, Dr. Michael Williams. He introduced us to the new area of study associated with the Nag Hammadi cache of ancient documents, first and second century BC and AD, so 200 or 300 year period. During one semester, we got to meet Elaine Pagels when Professor Williams invited her to visit the University of Washington to give a talk. She was deeply immersed in this specific field of study and wrote several books that we were reading at the time. Finally, I will mention the opportunity that we both had to meet Dr. Ramchandra Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi's grandson. He spent a whole semester teaching two classes. One, a history class on his grandfather, and the other in his own field, which was philosophy. Professor Gandhi was a very sweet and unassuming man. He was very easy to talk to and was very knowledgeable about all things philosophical and religious, and in both Western and Eastern contexts. Charmel audited the class on the Mahatma, and at the end of the semester, she invited him to a dinner that she put on so that he could meet Mother Hamilton. David and I both were invited, of course. It was most interesting. Mother was so natural around him. At the end of the visit, he asked to speak to Mother privately, and they spent about 10 minutes together in the dining room while the rest of us sat in the living room. As I was driving him back, he mentioned that Mother had helped him with some decision he was struggling with. I remember David being quite put out by the way that Professor Gandhi was treated by other professors who were sitting in at a few of the early philosophy class meetings. They were quite dismissive of some of his ideas. David felt it was disrespectful, and he quit the class early. I think he was just auditing that particular one anyway. David really hated injustice and disrespect. I struggled with this inwardly as I continued in the class. Being disputative may have been common in this field and at the graduate level which this class was. It may have been that the University of Washington had that sort of reputation. I never got a resolution on this. Professor Gandhi never complained, nor did he talk about it. The examples above were things that informed our conversations for many years. We learned so many of these things together, and so it bonded us on the intellectual plane. Because of our focus on our guru, we already had a spiritual and emotional bond. These experiences cemented our relationship. I found in David someone who had a very fine mind, and we developed a collaborative way of thinking about issues. I can't emphasize enough how our university schooling affected us. We may have been fellow students before in other lifetimes. I have sometimes wondered if we were fellow monks or priests too. One distinction comes to me as I write this, and that is that the Hindu or Eastern teachings were areas that David really excelled in, and that my interests or predilections, anyway, were aimed more toward the Christian teachings. These are due to small differences in our orientations, but as I think about it, it seems to be true. David and I grew up just 50 miles away from each other, and during our childhood, it's likely that we passed each other while traveling between Sunnyside and Yakima or the Tri-Cities where I lived. Perhaps we looked at one another, and a thought passed between us. When we met, it was at church service at Bonnie's house in northeast Seattle. I usually sat toward the front of the room, and David often sat at the back, sometimes in the small library just to the rear of the living room. The library was opened up for overflow when that happened. So I
don't right. stop there.
That's where it ends right now. I have more ideas.
Keep telling us, and then I'll get recorded, and then you can transcribe it.
Yeah, not a bad idea. So those first year or two, David traveled back and forth so much, so he didn't spend much time, afterwards, and I didn't have a chance to, spend time with him. I only knew him at Bonnie's house and the famous meeting at Mother's apartment later that year in Christmas time. But I knew him, and I talked with him, and I remember him sitting in the back. And oftentimes, if you see pictures of that house, you'll see David in the back, very back. Of course, he was one of the taller people, and the taller people tended to move to the back to allow the picture to be taken. And you can see him fully bearded in those pictures. No, it wasn't until David was in school in Seattle, in Edmonds, that he met Michael McCurley, and he brought Michael to meet Mother, and that was a very eventful day for Michael. And so my brother and I and Michael and Steve Fisher and David, of course, and one or two others in those first weeks or so were talking to Michael quite a bit. And Michael and David spent a great deal of time together because they were in school together in the community college of Edmonds Community College, I believe is what it was. But that's when I first started to get to know more about him and more what he was like. Michael brought us all together. There was a time it must have been 1980, 81, that we had a separation of our lives for some reason. We just drifted apart. One reason was that Michael and Gloria moved so close to us, very close to our house in West Seattle, very near Mother's first house in Seattle. Michael was about a block away and we were about three blocks away. And all three of us were newly married. Now, Michael had been married before and gotten divorced and then remarried to Gloria. And so we spent quite a bit of time together, but there was that time when, in 80, 81, I think is about right, where we really didn't see much of each other, and there was some antagonism between David and Michael developing. And David was newly married, and so he and Elvie lived up in about 160th Northeast, near the church, within a couple blocks of the church of that time, the Congregational Church, which is now gone. They put an apartment building in there on 155th or so, and 27th, and if I remember right, they lived on 160th and 30th Avenue Northeast. I think that's right. Yep, in Lake City Way, basically. And then Michael drifted. They moved up to the North End. And within a short time, Michael was drifting away. And moving back into maybe a lifestyle we all worried that was similar to the way he was living before when he got divorced. And before meeting Mother, of course. It was a talk that Mother gave on marriage that made Michael call Gloria or write to her and ask her to come back. Mother said something about, the wedding marriages should be more effort should be put into keeping marriages together. She could speak both ways, depending on the circumstance. She told other people not to worry, that had run its course. Sometimes there was a child that came from that marriage. This happens many times in those days where Mother would say, would put pressure one way to get back together and then another way to admit that it was over. But then, as Michael drifted away, David and I became closer. Of course, we saw each other twice a week in church. And the four of us got along really well. We often went and did things together. Then in 1981, Mother took off for the South Seas, and David was not ordained, but made a lay minister about that time. Just before she left, she ordained Keith Halverson and made David a lay minister. So David would give talks when Keith couldn't, basically. I can't remember David giving a talk before that, but it's possible he did. But he gave many after that steadily. Over the years, of course. One thing we found was that we could talk about everything, and that we were often on the same wavelength through those years. You know, I said in this writing it was a collaborative thing. You know, I think collaboration is so important, and I like what Khalil Gibran said about it. And collaboration is what is the most powerful thing of human endeavor together amongst friends and tribal members, family. Collaboration is really the great genius of humans, of the Homo sapiens. It's the great defining characteristic. And we had a great deal of psychic attunement. In surprising ways, very surprising ways. And with Mother's passing. You know, we all took it pretty well. Not that we were expecting it, but we were conditioned by Mother not to be seeing it as proof of anything externally and not proof of anything internally. That masters and all people pay prices for things. So we just took it on that level. And as the years went by, as we thought about what happened and how it happened, we saw it as Mother's third crucifixion. In the early 90s, David lived with us for a while on the Fauntleroy House. And we were having service there. But he lived in the basement. I guess that was the late 90s or mid 90s, I guess. Yeah, it was after he quit his job, that's right. So it would have been after 97, 98. You know, a great deal happened between us at that time in the sense that in in some respects, we were closer than brothers. Brothers have to get along just because they have the same family, and they are at least forced to intermix or inter. Mix is as good a word. With a family member, but often brothers do have close associations. And it was that type of relationship. Whenever we wanted to do something, we always found out if the other wanted to do it too, and if not, we'd go on our way, but always included. But David separated from me in the internal sense in the late 90s, probably. By the time he went into Cloud Mountain, he was pulling away. And it isn't that he was pulling away, it's just that's what it seemed like. He was entering a realm. And that even if I had attained the same state of mind that he was in, probably still would have had separation. Because that latter journey is all interior. Then you rely completely upon the guru within. And this is something I read, talked about, and knew about more afterwards. But it certainly was true that there was a a loss of that, see, it's not that there was loss of closeness. That's what I'm struggling with. It was
permeability.
Yeah. Access maybe. So I felt neutral about it. I wasn't like I had something lost from me. It was different. I was neutral, and so it wasn't like I really was, because I still could talk with him. We still saw each other a lot. Permeability might be, I know where you're pointing to. I think, yes, there's some truth there, yeah.
Larry?
Yes.
Do you think David recognized that? I mean, it doesn't sound like you talked directly about it.
Well,
I don't know why I asked that. It just came to me that.
That's a good question. He never commented on it. So no, the answer, he didn't talk about it. I think he was so fully occupied in what he was going through. Mm-hmm. That I don't think so. I don't know. And a lot of my understanding, you know, my memory is more and more faulty. It seems like maybe as time goes along, I just remember things less exactly that were 50 years ago as opposed to 20 years ago. The memory may be the same, but the ability to bridge the gap of many years is difficult.
I just have a memory of the silent retreat we did at Cloud Mountain, and you and David. You know, we were certainly the relationship ties showed there, and the laughter and the humidity or the humor, even though we were silent. Yeah. But I was fairly new then, you know, but I just remember observing that.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, we had been through so much together that we were comfortable. But, you know, because as I started to say, there was, I didn't feel a great loss of that connection. And I recognized it more afterwards. I was mostly watching him. So watching him, I didn't note the differences in our relationship. And outwardly, I don't think it changed anyway. So I had just as much access to him as ever, maybe even more so. When he lived with us, we were doing something. Now, this was definitely true after Cloud Mountain. After Cloud Mountain, he lived with us for a few months, and those were very powerful months. And then maybe a year or two, maybe Kate remembers better, before he went into Cloud Mountain, because Peter moved, and he lost his place in Kirkland. So maybe it was just a few months after he came back from Cloud Mountain. Because, Peter, do you remember did David go into Cloud Mountain while he was still living with you?
It seems like we packed him up from Kirkland and took him to Cloud Mountain.
That seems right to me too.
Yeah. He came to us after Cloud Mountain and stayed until he and Carla got married, and then they came back after
They were Julie and David's for a couple of weeks, and then
went between our place and Rich's place up on the Whidbey.
Went to India.
And he was traveling and then going to India. So, it was more of a me watching him, observing him. You know, sometimes I have to be accurate here. You know, when David was, and this happened a couple times, when he was really out of sorts with his, you know, he said he couldn't even balance his checkbook during those times. And I remember that I used to find him saying things that I was thinking or saying, and owning it as his own. Now, that had happened before, where we, in the earlier times, when we were in tune with each other, we would see that happening. But honestly, it was during this time, he seemed to, I'm not exactly sure where. There's two times when this happened, before Cloud Mountain and after Cloud Mountain, where he really was not functioning. His brain was not completely functioning well, or, you know, in a normal fashion. And this is well understood in the world of Kundalini and the world of spiritual experiences. So this is something I had never talked about, but it is something to think about, and it is true. That he would, I would hear him saying things that I had said to someone else, or thinking, something I was thinking. But here's what struck me at the time, to be honest. It was as though he couldn't make his mind do those kinds of thoughts. And he relied on my mind to do it. It was an odd experience. And I remember it being just struck by it, and it usually lasted a few months, that he seemed to be, wow, it's really quite something to say out loud, but it is true. It is true that I experienced it this way anyway. So in that sense, he was using me as a grounding rod, or And one thing that he gave me was clarity in his presence. Calm, clarity, and spiritual upliftment. Now that was something that we, before Cloud Mountain, something that we developed between us was this practice, not intentional, but it was a practice to lift our thoughts higher and higher, contemplating on something to do with mother's life or master's life, and then on the spiritual experiences that each of us had had or spiritual experiences that we were going through at the time. So it was, very powerful. I can't help but see his face right now so strongly, and his smile. And the sound of Om. Sometimes the sound of Om comes like roaring waters, deafening silence, completely replacing all of the outer ear. And when you examine it, you realize there's no sound at all. It's not really sound. It's lifting the soul into the higher parts of the body. And as it synchronizes, it lifts the spirit. And the body is left behind. But there is very strong correlation or connection to things that are happening in the body. I'm sorry, I just keep seeing his face. Mother brought us all together, didn't she? That we all have this intimacy, this common thread, this common essence that is this, it's focused all around Mother and David that we share in. Anyway.
Larry, I was just going to say that at first I was going to say, you know, I've been missing David so much in the last few days. I've been so emotional, really, really missing him. And at the time, Ricky is now working for David. And so every day we have talks of David in our house. Not something.
That's nice, yeah.
I love it, and so very thankful.
Yeah. That's a wonderful thing he's doing.
Mm-hmm. He loves it, you know.
Good.
He's He just has his earphones on lots, and he's just in another world, and he, instead of just snatching up a section of the video, he'll listen to the whole thing. And today he had it on out loud, and it's like, how do you do anything else when David's beautiful voice is in your living room? You sit down, you enjoy it, and his laughter, David's laughter. How would you not want to laugh right along with his beautiful laughter?
We, one time when I was at the ashram, I guess it was the year after David, or the year David passed in 2019, and what everybody talked about, because they all missed seeing him, not seeing him, was his smile. Mm-hmm. Every single person talked about his smile. Mm-hmm. That was the smile and the laughter, but the smile, they all said. A wonderful smile he had.
We had the picture printed in India, or we had it printed here and then framed in India for David's picture to go on the wall of the canteen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's, you know, a very large picture, and it got delivered, and Swami Muktananda opened it up, and he looks at it and he says, "Oh, that smile."
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was one of them that was saying that.
I'll never forget. He's, oh, that smile. He says.
He mentioned it again when he was here with us in June. Mm-hmm.
It meant. That smile meant that we were all receiving what Larry was talking about. That calmness, that upliftment, you know, that.
That was part of being with him, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You could rest in David's presence, complete rest.
Mm.
Don't you feel it too amongst us all that we have something?
Planted that seed in each one of us to share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Knew how important that was. Only thing, you'd say, the only thing you can give me is to get your own God realization.
So as we apprehend all of these elements, what we're sharing is this in a way, it's a seed like the Christ seed. It's what we're all focused around. Mother and David were, and Master were, the face of this spirit. But this spirit's in all of us. And that's the part within us that responds. It's right and proper for us all to focus and to face the Guru. Not that that is the only place that it is, but in our mind, it is the necessary thing to latch onto. And because as we do, we can go, it's really bottomless. You can, or without limit upward, however you want to look at it. it is really just as deep as you can go at any given moment. But it's something we never lose. It's something that many of us, most of us, came with in this lifetime, that we've had experience with this. And that's what draws us. Anyway. Now, don't we all miss him so much, and Mother? Let's say our closing prayer. O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of thy glorious presence.
Thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee.
And surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Oh. 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 Peace.
Peace.
Bliss.
Bliss.
Amen. I'm going to play a chant by Swami Vivekananda, Prem Vivekananda from Chandraswami, that we played last Sunday. It's quite beautiful and quite unusual. Got a beautiful voice. And then you can just leave as you feel the mood. And as you have things to do, and then this is about 8.5 minutes long, and I'll close the thing after this.
Satchidananda Guru, Satchidananda. 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 Satchidananda Guru, O Satchidananda Guru, Satchidananda. Satchidananda. Om Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru
Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda
Om Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru
Om Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda
Om Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru
Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru
Satchidananda Guru
Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru
Satchidananda Om Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda
Satchidananda Guru Satchidananda Sachidananda Guru, Sachidananda Guru, Sachidananda Guru, Sachidananda Sachidananda Guru Sachidananda Om Sachidananda Guru Sachidananda Sachidananda Guru Sachidananda Sachidananda Guru Sachidananda
Sachidananda Guru Sachidananda
Om Sachidananda Guru Sachidananda
Hari Om.